Hey people, are you in the market for a new watch but don't know how to go about it? Well, I'm here to help. As your luxury timepiece concierge, I will help you source, purchase, and get you the best possible price at no additional cost to you. With questions, please email me at amitdevhonda@gmail.com, or you can contact me by going to my website at www.amitdevhonda.com. Okay, on with the show. On today's episode, I talked to punk historian, writer, and journalist Legs McNeil. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
What's going on there, people? I'm on the phone with Legs McNeil, who's an author, writer, and punk historian. How you doing, Legs?
How are you, Amit?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
My pleasure. What's the weather like in Vegas?
It's actually like 90 degrees.
Oh, no. Don't tell me that, because it's still freezing here. It's, you know, don't do that.
Lucky you.
Yeah, lucky me. Yeah.
I'm from the East Coast, too. I think you're from Connecticut originally, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's cool. In my mind...
No, it's not.
Well...
Being from Connecticut is probably the worst... It's probably the thing I'm ashamed of the most.
Really? Is it because you're divided between New York and Boston, or is it just where you grew up?
No, it's just where I grew up, and it's just awful, you know? And there's nothing there. There's absolutely nothing there. There's nothing interesting about Connecticut.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I mean... I guess unless you're some sort of like aristocrat living in Greenwich.
Greenwich, yeah.
Even then, I mean, that's pretty fucked up. There's nothing really cool about being from Connecticut other than you're 45 minutes from New York City.
Yes, exactly.
So I wanted to get into, I think, like, you know, one of the main reasons I wanted to interview you is because, you know, I mean, I'm not sure if I'm right about this, but you kind of coined the term punk, right?
Yeah, when Holmstrom wanted to do this magazine, and he kept talking about doing this magazine, and he wanted to combine comics with rock and roll, and he wanted to call it Teenage News, and I said, why don't we call it punk?
And I think that came from, like, you would watch like a Kojak or Telly Savalas and use the word.
Well, punk. You know, it was very easy. It was something that someone had called me my whole life. You know, you're nothing but a punk. And there were so many great cop shows in the 70s. And when they caught the bad guy at the end, you know, they didn't say, you know, you motherfucking asshole, you know, they said, you know,
yeah.
And you're going to burn in the electric chair. They said, you dirty punk. You know, it was kind of TV's, accepted way of saying, you know, you're a bad guy, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so that's...
And I always love television terms, too, you know. And I love TV, so...
Absolutely, and it's... But did you ever think at that time with the magazine, with you and John Holmstrom, that you would, like, create this revolution that spread across the world and is a genre in itself? I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable.
Well... At the time, you know, it took 40 years for it to really catch on. So, you know, at the time, it wasn't that hip, you know? You know,
right.
to, except for 200 people in New York, you know. But most of the people, you know, the Ramones did not want to be called a punk band. You know, no one wanted to be called a punk band at the time, you know? So it was kind of this double-edged sword. So now 40 years later, it's like, yeah, other people had used the term too, but it really didn't stick until we came out with the magazine, you know.
So what
we were also selling more mag. I found this out later from Holmstrom. We were also selling more magazines in London than we were in anywhere else, you know.
Well, that doesn't surprise me because it kind of. Like, you know, listen, America is so iconic for so many different things, Converse sneakers, burgers, you name it. And that sort of goes with that kind of thing. So that, I mean, a lot of people think punk was invented or created in England, but that actually...
Well, we were doing Punk Magazine for 3 years, and my mother called me one day. She said, Eddie, that's what she called me, Eddie, punk started in England. You know, you had nothing to do with it. I said, yeah, thanks. My mom was very, very supportive.
Well, I mean, wasn't it like, if you look at it historically, like, okay, I guess we go back, we go to the earliest, I guess you would say it's really, even before the Ramones and before the New York Dolls, wasn't it really like the Velvet Underground that kind of started the punk or a different kind of movement?
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. I think the Velvet Underground started everything. You know, plus they came out of this Warhol thing, and, you know, Andy had such a great work ethic and such a great, you know, he was always thinking of ideas, and he was, you know, I used to bring him the copies of the new issue every month, you know.
No way, that's so cool.
You know, and he would stand there and he'd go, oh, you guys have all the ideas. I don't have any. This is so brilliant. And you know, you're standing there. You're 19 years old. You know,
right.
you don't have any money, and you're standing next to Andy Warhol, and he's telling you this is the most brilliant thing in the world. Meanwhile, you know, you can't afford a pack of cigarettes.
But
what it was kind of like.
But at that time, were you? I mean, obviously, you're young and stuff. But did you realize the effect of who Andy Warhol was, or were you just?
Yeah. We pretended to be a lot dumber than we were, but you know, which was kind of fun. But we knew what we were doing. Yeah, you know, Holmstrom had gone to school with Harvey Kurtzman. We used to have dinner and Harvey's daughter. Liz Kurtzman worked as a waitress at CBGB's. So, and Harvey Kurtzman was the guy who started Mad Magazine before William Gaines took it over. So, yeah, we had studied everybody. We had studied Walt Disney. We had studied, you know, how people managed to put together things, you know. So we were kind of looking at everything, you know.
Which is pretty smart, because, I mean, I recently interviewed Andy Warhol's nephew, Donald Warhol, and I don't know if you know Vincent Fremont, who ran Andy Warhol Enterprises.
Yeah, I did know Vincent, yeah.
So I recently interviewed Vincent as well, and I guess Andy's favorite artist, if you would ask him, was he would even say Walt Disney. So it's kind of smart that you looked at it that way, and you adapted, like, this sort of Fuck You magazine, which I think you guys kind of created like the first sort of fanzine, if you will, in a very sort of comic style way, what became fanzines later on. But I think like the way I heard your name, Legs, was it was pretty insane. So I'm from Boston originally. My dad had the world's largest store for Swatch watches. And I learned
Swatch watches?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
I'm this little Indian kid, little Indian punk rocker, totally different than anyone else. You know, it's hard to make friends, these immigrant parents, you know, got my first tattoo, I think, when I was 16. My dad, like, looked at my mom, and he was like, he's definitely gay. And so, you know, my mom was like, well, he's not gay, he's just colorful. You know,
he's just colorful. Oh, that's great.
And I just remember like running the store for Swatch watches and selling limited edition plastic watches and getting an education in fashion, music, art, pop culture all at one time because of this brand. And I had these limited edition Swatches were very hard to come by. It was one per customer. And I just remember I had this client who bought these religiously, and he's like, how do you get me to the front of the line, man? He's like, there's like 1,000 people who want these things. And I said, okay, I have a couple of requests. If you can fulfill these requests, I will get you to the front of the line. And the requests were the first pressing of Nevermind the Bollocks on vinyl, The Clash's London Calling on vinyl, and every issue of Punk Magazine ever created. So he came through, man. And,
oh, wow. Wow.
And I got all of them. And this is like when I was like 14 years old. 14 to 15 years old.
When it really means something, you know, when you're really like holding on to it and your whole life is in this one thing, you know.
Absolutely. And I just was blown the fuck away. And I was like, that's where I first saw your name and I saw John Holmstrom's name. And I was like, this is so cool. Lou Reed was on the first cover. I got everything was in pristine condition, and unfortunately, my whole collection got stolen, which I was really, really upset about.
Sorry.
But
I'm sorry.
But the, but that's why I heard your name, and I was like, so this is kind of a surreal dream for me to be interviewing you.
I love it. You know, it's great. When we did the first, when Please Kill Me came out, we did this first tour, and we were in West Covina for some reason. Not even LA, and we were in this bookstore, and these giant Mexican guys came. They looked like Samoans. They were so fat, and they looked like they were in a gang, And I was like, oh fuck, did we piss off like the Bloods and the Crips? what's going on? And they kind of shuffled up very sheepishly, and they said, hey, can I ask you something? I said, sure, you can, don't kill me, And they said, what's Tom Verlaine really like? And I was like, wait a minute, you guys were in the ghetto in East L.A. listening to Little Johnny Jewel. And they said, yeah, we sent away for it on the back of Punk Magazine. And they were really nice guys. It was really kind of sweet. And I had a lot of those experiences, just like the weirdest people in the world, being into this stuff. So it was really kind of fun,
Well, it's kind of cool because I saw that, at that time even, I saw early interviews of you and John, and it's like, you guys didn't have any money.
I know.
It's crazy how you got this thing, printed every, was it month? It was monthly, right?
It was monthly until we fired Jed, which I know, Jed was another guy from our high school who subsequently died. He's passed away. So,
sorry to hear that.
He was kind of the business guy, and I didn't agree with everything,
Right.
And I wish we'd stayed together, and and done more of a formula magazine than just everything being so crazy. Like when I suggested that we do Nick Detroit, I suggested that we run it as a page every month, not do a whole issue, which is really what killed the magazine. Putting out an issue with a swastika on the cover, in black and white, It was just and Holmes was, this is brilliant. And I was like, oh, John. I was much more commercially minded than Holmes was,
Now, were you through this whole time, what was Andy Warhol's reaction to your magazine?
He loved it, actually. He really did,
And especially with Lou Reed and stuff. Lou must have, I know he was a very interesting, I know that he would frustrate the shit out of any interviewer because he would just kind of, answer in one word answer.
But you know what? Lou loved Holmstrom, and they would always, I came out of blackout once when we were at Clive Davis's 50th birthday party. And John,
right.
And I would see, I'd be sitting next to John, and Lou would just be talking, on speed to John, and I'd grab John by his shirt sleeves and say, can't we get out of here and just go downtown and pick up chicks,
Okay.
Everyone here is old, I don't want to hang out with old people,
That's incredible.
And John would say, shut up, Legs, shut up, just leave me alone and let me talk to Lou,
Now, he gave you the name Legs McNeil, right?
Yes.
So, I know, he gave you the name, but how did that come about? Why?
Because when we were, we were very goofy. And when I said, we should call it punk, they just said, yeah. And John said, I'll be the editor. And Jed said, I'll be the publisher. And then they both looked at me and said, what are you going to do? And then John said, you could be the resident punk. And he thought that was hysterical, And we need tougher because Eddie, my real name is Roderick, but I didn't know that because my father named me that, and then he died when I was born. So my mother always called me Eddie. So
right.
So they said, yeah, and you can wrestle. Handsome Dick Manitoba had come out the year before in that album Go Girl Crazy, where he dressed in a wrestling outfit on the front cover.
He did.
I don't know if you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Well, they said you can wrestle Handsome Dick Manitoba, but we need another name for you, And John was thinking arms or stuff, because I was so skinny,
Right.
But when he said legs, I said, yeah, that's the one,
And it kind of stuck, and it's become so iconic and cool. Now, from what I've seen in the documentaries and stuff and what I've read, you were pretty close to Joey Ramone, right?
Yeah, I think I was Joey's kind of first friend when he moved to the city. Yeah.
That's incredible. What
and
was
he was living with her.
What was
Joey
he,
was Joey was wonderful, funny. He could say more in two words than most people can say in, you know, a thousand, you know? I mean, Joey was wonderful. And he really, really loved rock and roll. He loved the, all aspects of it. He loved DJs. He loved the whole rock and roll culture, and he loved punk magazine. He used to write for us, you know, and do stuff and do cartoons and stuff. I mean, he loved the magazine, you know.
Well, you can see just, like, from even pictures, like, you know, I mean, from what I can see, I mean, there was definitely tension. Obviously, it's no surprise, and it's been documented that he and Johnny, obviously, because of, you know, Johnny's, you know, wife and stuff like that, and all of that. But you could see that, I don't know, like, Joey had this sort of incredible, like, quality, but he seemed to be really humble, like, through the whole thing. Like,
he was such a decent guy, you know? He really was. You know, and he had such a great voice. And I loved being a fan, you know? You know, because we'd hang out, and then it would be time for him to play, and I'd go, okay, I'm going to go be a fan, see ya, you know? You know, I'll go up front, you know? And then afterwards, go, oh, that was great. You know, I was just like, you know, I was like, that was great. That was the best show, you know? You know?
But you
like,
remain...
Oh, thanks. Like, let's go pick up chicks, you know?
But you guys remained friends till he died? Like, you guys were...
No, because Joey had... we didn't talk the last 10 years, because Joey was... Joey... You know, after Johnny did that thing with Linda, Joey became, you know, I don't mean to speak ill of him at all, but Joey heard voices, you know, and he was extremely paranoid. You know, he was paranoid schizophrenic, basically. You know?
Yeah.
So if Joey believed something was true, even if it wasn't, it became true in Joey. And he always said, there was this one girl who I think I was in the room with her and Joey like three times in my life, but you slept with her, and I was like, no, I didn't, Joey, no. I mean, there were other girlfriends that we did, you know, we did share.
That you did sleep with, yeah.
Yeah, but he never brought them up because they were kind of ugly, you know? You know?
Oh, my God. And then so now, like, and then obviously you and Mickey Lee wrote, you know, I Slept with Joey Ramone, which was a great book.
And that's Mickey's book. It's not mine at all.
It's not. It's no. Okay. You, I saw you and him both reading it, I think, at one of the bookstores in New York.
I helped promote it and stuff, but, you know, it's Mickey's book.
It's Mickey's book. And you guys are still friends?
Yeah.
That's cool. That's really, really cool. What an interesting time period. So, like, obviously, are you still friends with all those guys, like Blondie and all those guys?
Yeah, when I see, you know, but, you know, everyone's touring and, you know, different stuff. You know, I just did a reading about Arturo, and Gruen and Danny came, and we all went out to dinner afterwards, and, you know,
very
they're
cool.
Wonderful, you know. I'm more friends with, you know, the people who worked and still work, you know, doing managing and, you know, all that stuff.
Right. And I mean, you...
The ancillary, you know, stuff. And I'm also friends with lots of rock stars, too, you know?
Yeah. You know, I'm friends with Elliot Easton from The Cars, and he's like an uncle to me. And I interviewed him, and I was like, I actually was Facebook messaging him yesterday, and I was like, Uncle Elliot, I'm interviewing, it looks like I'm interviewing Legs McNeil. And I don't know if you know who he is. And he goes, of course, sure. I know Legs, Punk Magazine. Absolutely.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts, by the way, on, you know, on the new TV show Vinyl? Hello?
You get it?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay.
Just dead space? That's it?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's yelling and stuff. You know, the mob guys were the nicest guys in the world. They were sweethearts. You know, you didn't want to piss them off, of course.
Right.
But they did. But they weren't yelling like this and stuff. They actually, because they were tainted by organized crime, they actually kind of went out of their way to be even more charming and funny. And, you know, it wasn't every – and, you know, when they're snorting the coke, no one's having org. You snort it. You don't go, ah, you know.
Yeah.
You know, like, you just do it, you know.
Yeah, like, don't
you
make
know,
a
I mean, it's so overdone and so bad that,
it's,
you know.
It's ridiculously overly stylized, I think. And
yeah.
It doesn't take me, like, back to the era at all. it's almost like a caricature of itself. It's like, and, you know, and the thing is, I was born in 76, so, like, I don't have the frame of reference you have, obviously, but...
Well, I saw the first episode, and the guy's going, like, oh, man, are you listening to Suicide? No one from the record company had any interest in Suicide whatsoever. Trust me, okay? Because I helped Marty Thau mix the vocals on that record, you know?
Wow, wow.
You know, and David Bowie stole my test pressing from me. So, you know, like, just stuff, I mean, you know, it's just so bad and so awful. But you know what? Everybody seems to like it, and you know, everybody remembers Martin Scorsese from Goodfellas and Casino, but they don't remember him from, you know, all the shit he made too. You know.
Well, yeah, and
you know, and Martin Scorsese made a lot of shitty movies.
He has, and I'm curious to see now what he does with the Ramones thing.
I'll probably fuck that one up too.
Probably,
you know, because they're not going to the sources and saying, hey, what, you know, what was this really like, you know? They're
but
just,
I mean,
kind of reimagine, you know, once everyone's dead, you can do whatever you want.
Totally,
you know, because no one's there to say, no, that's not right, you know.
But would you say that, like, you know, like the whole time during TVs and stuff, like the CBGB movie, were you pretty happy with it?
No, not at all.
It
was horrible. Are you kidding me?
I didn't think it was good at all. I was very, very disappointed with.
They had me in the first scene in Holmstrom's basement. I was never even in Holmstrom's house. And they had John saying, yeah, I want to do a punky punk thing with punky punks and punks, punk, punk, punks. What should we call the magazine legs? Punk, you know? That, you know, Holmstrom's rewriting history too, you know?
Now, and you and John, are you still, you're still friends, right? You still talk?
No, I despise the guy.
Really? Wow. That's amazing. I mean...
You know what? When he did his book, The Best of Punk, he cut me out of it. I drove him to my agent's house for him to get the book deal and talked to my publisher who did the other Hollywood, my oral history of the porn film industry, who actually bought the book. And I said, his name is Cal Morgan, and I said to him that night, I said, do me one favor. And he said, what's that? And he said, what's that? And I said, don't let John talk you out of it, because John is the most self-sabotaging guy I've ever met in my life.
Wow!
And he didn't even say thank you in the book to me, you know.
That's pretty fucked up.
Yeah, and you know, John's done some really awful things to me business-wise, you know, where he agrees on one thing and he changes it later and goes, "No, I need a bigger percentage," you know. But I don't want to talk about Holmstrom.
No, I don't want to. I want to move on from.
You know what? When you get older and stuff, if you don't keep working and you don't, you know, like I'm really happy. I'm really pleased with what we did at Punk Magazine and stuff. But I've done so much other stuff than that. You know, that's the only thing that anyone ever wants to talk to me about. But, you know.
Well, I mean,
anyway.
I mean, I, you know, like it's like in England. So I grew up in England half of my life as well. And it's just so funny when I go to my, you know, family's house in London, you've got all these books on, like, you know, the history of England. And then right wedged in between it is Please Kill Me. And it's so funny because I'll see, like, my cousins, my nephews even, like, be like, this is so cool. Whose is this? And I'm like, it's mine. And they're like, oh, my God, I can't believe that you read that when you were, like, 19 or 20 years old. And I'm like, yeah, it was like a Bible for me.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind of you to say.
You did a phenomenal job with that. And I think, like, how would you say, like, you're living in Pennsylvania right now, right?
Well, I have a place in New York. I'm based in Pennsylvania. I have a place in New York and a place in L.A., too.
Okay, great. So how often are you in New York?
I'm in New York now.
Okay. Well, I'm celebrating my...
I want to go home. I want to go back to work.
So what is your day-to-day like, though, Lex? Like, what's your... Like, what do you...
When I come into New York?
Yeah.
when I come into New York, it's just doing it. You know, it's just everybody. It's a little overwhelming, and I usually don't like to stay here that long. You know.
Yeah. So is it? Would you? How?
I usually hide out. I'm always hiding. You know.
And it's obviously it's massively changed from that, you know, from the bankrupted 70s time period where everyone was super creative. It's a very, very different city. But I guess you can still feel the energy, right? You can still feel the electricity.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 You know, it's just a different time, you know?
I'm going to New York, actually, at the end of April for my 40th birthday bash. The whole idea is an 80s themed party.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And I just, like, so I'm in the watch business. I'm still in the watch business. So I kind of want to do what Warhol did with people's portraits to iconic watches on canvas.
Oh, cool.
And I don't think anyone's really done that before. But it's just kind of cool to be in that city and get that inspiration. You can feel it.
Yeah, yeah. It's New York's fun, but, you know, I work a lot, and I'd rather be working than doing promo or press, but, you know, that's part of it, you know. But I'd rather be actually making the stuff, you know. We just have the 20th anniversary edition of Please Kill Me is coming out with brand new chapters. It's coming out May 10th. And we also did a two-hour NPR radio show using the original clips from the original interviews. You know, Jim Carroll talking about going to see the Stooges with Patty and Ron and Scott Ashton and Iggy. I mean, it's just wonderful, you know. And that's kind of our answer to vinyl, you know. It's like fuck making it up, you know. Like, let's just go to the source, you know.
Well, that's cool because it's an authentic voice.
Iggy talking about, you know, going to play the blues in Chicago and smoking a joint by the river and coming up with the idea that he could write his own blues, you know, and apply it to these. I mean, it's just wonderful, the stuff in it, you know.
But
we're real happy with that, you know.
And
we're real happy with the new edition of Please Kill Me, because if you're going to add new chapters to something, they better be really, really good, you know, and they are.
That's incredible. And so you had to travel quite a bit to get that thing sort of extended. Like, research-wise, did you have to do
it? No. We were working on another book. We're trying to do a new book where we do for the 60s in L.A. what we did for the 70s in New York, which is called 69, A Narrative of Oral History, which will probably be out 2018 or so, you know.
Wow, that's really cool. Well, I hope, like...
So we had to stop working on that to do all this promo and, you know, do the new edition and then do the radio show, which was a nightmare to do because we had to write kind of backwards. We had to see which clips were the audio was so you could hear it, you know.
Wow, that's so.
And then write around those clips. So it was kind of working in a new genre and a new format, which was quite difficult, you know.
Who would you say legs out of? I mean, I'm sure you. Do you still go to rock shows? Do you still see bands?
When I have to.
So what was the best gig you?
No, I do. Yeah, I do. You know, but I like to go see good guys. Like I became friends. You know, I've been friends with Keith Morris forever when Flag was touring. I mean, they were great. They were tight. They were Ramones tight. You know.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. They're. You know. You know. And seeing some of these guys, yeah, I go when I can, you know.
Who would you say is your? What was probably the show for you that stuck out the most? That you're just like, I don't think anything could ever trump this. Or
you know what? I said that about the Ramones used to play CBGBs like every 2 weeks,
right?
And, you know, you'd see them getting better. You know, I was there when they were writing Joey and Dee Dee. Everyone says it was a three-string guitar, but it was two strings. I never saw the third string. And they'd be writing the songs at Arturo's Loft right around the corner from CB's, you know. And then you'd go and they'd say, oh, this is a new song. And, they, you know, they'd do, you know, Sedated or whatever, you know. And it was like, wow, this show, nothing can get better than this show. And then 2 weeks later, they play again, and they'd be even better. You know, it was seeing them get better and better and better. And same with Blondie, you know, and a lot of different, you know, because when these guys started, they weren't, they were just finding their legs, so to speak, you know.
You know what I think is the coolest thing I've ever seen is in the beginning of this year, you, I think, gave President Clinton a copy of Please Kill Me.
Yeah. That was, that was so cool. That was at the Norman Mailer Awards when Keith Richards was getting his award for life.
Right.
You know, and Clinton gave it to him.
And he, I think you said something to him on the effect that I don't think you should show this to your wife or whatever.
Yeah, I did. But you know what? Elie Wiesel was there that night too, who wrote Night, you know, about being in Auschwitz, you know, which and I met him that night and I said, Mr. Wiesel. And he said, it's Wiesel, you know. And I was like, ooh, okay. I am not worthy. You know.
Yeah. That's very cool. I work with President Clinton. I sold him a watch in 2004. So he's an amazing man. He's incredible. But just to see that sort of, you know, picture, that iconic picture. Bob Gruen took that picture, right?
Yes, he did.
Of you and the president together is so fucking cool, man. It's like it looks.
Well, you know what was interesting about that night? Women were literally throwing themselves at Clinton. I mean, it was amazing to see. He has this sex vibe. I mean, seriously, where women were, like, draping around. I mean, thank God no one got pictures of him, because I think Hillary would have been really pissed. But I think it's really hard when you're, like, Clinton, and so many girls are, like, offering themselves to you.
Like,
you know,
swooning over you, like you're...
Yeah, you know, it was amazing, you know?
And he's, like, in his, what, mid-60s or something? Like,
yeah.
So that's pretty cool, but congratulations to you on all of your success, and you know, I'm just
the paperback version of Dear Nobody, which was this diary or which was these journals that we turned into a diary about this girl who had a really troubled life, which is kind of the real Go Ask Alice, that just came out this week in paperback too.
Oh, congratulations.
Jillian McCain's and my other book that we edited together.
And you and Jillian, like, you guys, this is what, you've done two books together or three books together?
We've done two and the radio show, and we're working on this third book.
That's absolutely amazing. How did you, I know she's originally from Canada, right?
Right. She's from Fredericton, which is, I think, in New Brunswick. But she always yells at me, yeah, get it right. No Americans care about Canada. You know?
But you guys have been, you know, friends or, you know, working together for 20 plus years now, right?
Yes, yeah, yeah. So, she's like my best friend.
How did you guys, like, meet each other? How did that all sort of come about for Please Kill Me? Like, why her and how did the concept sort of start?
We were friends at I met her through Maggie Estep. Do you remember her? She was a poet who died.
I don't.
She was like 50 years old and had a heart attack. But I met her through her, and we became friends. And I was working on this Dee Dee Ramone book. Dee Dee came to me, and I said, why don't we do it as an oral history like Edie? And him and his agent had never heard of this. And things didn't work out with Dee Dee. And Jillian kept saying, it's bigger than Dee Dee. It's bigger than Dee Dee. And I was interviewing Danny Fields, and Jillian was – she was working at the Poetry Project, the St. Mark's Poetry Project, which she later became the head of the board of directors for. And she's a very good writer, you know. And we just – I said to her, well, why don't we do the oral history of punk together, you know. And she said, okay, you know.
We just
learned how to work. I send her stuff, and I go – This version is it. And she'll send it back, and she'll go, no, in the second graph, you fucked up, and that, you know. And why, she's very, very good. She's so between the both of us. And we decided very early on that we didn't want to produce any more crap. Well, you know, the world is filled with enough crap. You know, 99% of everything, 99% of most movies, 99% of most TV, 99% of most music is crap. And we just didn't want to make any more crap or put it out there, you know. We wanted to do something that touched you and
you did.
You know, and inspired you, you know.
You did, and you totally did. And I can't thank you enough, Legs, for the effect that you've had on my life. And it's really, really incredible full circle that, you know, 30 years later, I'm being able to interview you. And you've done so many incredible things, and I wish you continued success, man. And I hope one day, you know, I go to New York a lot, and I don't know if it will ever happen, but I'd love to put a name to a face and grab a coffee or something.
Sure, and when I'm in Vegas, I'll look you up.
Please do, anytime.
Yeah, and thank you so much for doing this, and it was very kind of you to give me those nice compliments.
Well, you're very kind for doing this, man, and I'm sure we'll catch up soon.
Okay, great.
Take care.
You too.
Well, there you have it, folks. That was my conversation with Legs McNeil, who it's like a dream for me to be able to do this interview. You know, growing up, you know, I came from, you know, hardworking, middle-class family, you know, Indian family. You know, my father was self-made, and, you know, he certainly instilled a lot of values in us, but it was very, you know, I worked this since I was a very young kid, and didn't have I knew a lot of people, but didn't have a lot of friends, and, you know, magazines and books and all these things, especially in punk and art and fashion and music and, you know, pop culture in general, was very, very fascinating to me. And they said that those mediums became my friends. And it's pretty remarkable that I was able to interview Legs McNeil. He's a really interesting guy, and honestly, really cool and kind of him to do it, you know, and I can't wait to meet him when I'm in New York or when he's in Vegas or wherever we are. Hopefully, we'll get to catch up. I'd also like to thank Shellboy Music and DJ Flipside for providing the musical tracks to this podcast. If you want to know what's going on with me and the watch industry, or with me in general, you know, just check me out at www.amitdavehonda.com. You can see my Instagram feed from my website, and you know, it's kind of a cool site. It's primarily a watch site, but you can definitely on my Instagram see, like, you know, where I go and what I do, and, you know, very watch centric. But I do love the arts. I do love stuff outside the watch industry, and, you know, Instagram is definitely a great place to go. You can also check out my Facebook watch page. You can check out my Twitter. Sign up for my weekly newsletter. I will throw the link down below. And until we meet again, rock on and fly back.